Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the FV English podcast, one of three previewing the opposition that Venezuela will face at the Toulon tournament over the course of the next week or so. Venezuela have been drawn in Group B alongside Mexico, Ghana, and Indonesia, opening with their first game on Monday against Indonesia, which will be at 7:30 a.m. Venezuela time, so it will be an early start for local fans. But this, our actual first recording, is on the topic of Mexico, and we are joined by Naib, a Mexican football journalist and media specialist, previously with New York Red Bulls, and someone that FootBay English has worked alongside with before, particularly with Christian Casares Jr. and Wiki Carmona. Naib, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Good, Jordan. It's always great to talk to you about the game. And you know, it's exciting times. Now this tournament's always exciting because of the new talent out there. And, you know, for Venezuela, of course, a great opportunity to showcase their talent now that they're starting this new process with Beckerman. And you know, he'll oversee all of what's going on with the team. And hopefully we see Venezuela in the next World Cup.
Yeah, it will be obviously the first World Cup if Venezuela were to make it. But on the same theme, this is our first Toulon tournament. And, you know, I think some Venezuelan fans at first perhaps didn't realize the importance of this tournament. But Mexico have participated in 26 Toulon tournaments, only bettered by France, who are technically the hosts, and Portugal. So you'll be very familiar with this tournament. For Venezuelan football fans that maybe don't understand or don't have an appreciation of just how big a deal this tournament is, what could you enlighten us with?
You know, I see it as this ideal scenario for Latin American national teams. You know, they have this opportunity to travel to Europe, be in front of the eyes of the scouts. And, you know, there's, I don't know the number, but it's crazy the amount of scouts that go to this tournament. For Mexico, it's helped Diego Lainez land a deal with Betis. It definitely helped Edson Alvarez at one point, I think, to get to Ajax. So it's a spot where it's like a light bulb effect, you know, of like, oh, look at the talent from Latin America. And that's where the follow starts, no? The close following of seeing the games on, you know, all these software that nowadays the scouts use. But having this opportunity to be present there and see them live, I think, it's something that I always like to do, you know, see how influential they can be in the game. But I think, like you said, for Latin American teams, it's just a great opportunity to showcase, you know, and to see what they have, and especially for those players that haven't been able to go to Europe yet. So I think that's I think, the big win for the teams from our region.
And to hear that from a Mexican, a fan of the Mexico national team, is going to be reassuring to listeners and Venezuelan football fans. Because like I said, arguably the most illustrious footballing nation in the group, alongside Venezuela, who haven't participated before, Indonesia, who are on their second participation, and Ghana, who are on their third participation. So you're very much the heavyweights of the group. You won it in 2012. Finished runner-up in 2018 and a finished third on three occasions. Diego Lainez won the player of the tournament in 2018, Hector Herrera in 2012, and Mexicans have also won the Golden Boot on three occasions. What can you tell us about your squad heading into this tournament?
I think, you know, there is an experience there. In the case of, like, Pisuto, who went to Leo, and now he's, you know, in Braga, but it hasn't been able to break out, unfortunately, in Europe. But I think he's a player that I think he was a talent with Pachuca when he was coming up the ranks. And I think this is a huge opportunity for him just to sort of feel comfortable in the midfield and see what he can do. I think also the presence of Efraín Álvarez from Galaxy is very important here, you know, because Efraín has had a lot of first team minutes with the Galaxy already at this stage of his career. But hasn't been able to break in the senior national team, no? For example, now you see the case of, like, Lainez and even now Marcelo Flores from Arsenal, that they're already with the senior team. I think Efraín was on that path, but I think, I feel like Tata Martino sees this opportunity for him to be the star, no? To be the guy. So that's why they send him to this tournament, the U21. And I think Efraín was open to the idea. mainly because there's also a lot of players from that U17 team that was in that World Cup recently, played in Peru, where they play the final against Brazil, if I'm not mistaken. So that's where you see the Santi Muñoz, the Efraín Álvarez, the Pisuto, the Guzmán, also some names from that generation. And I think that's why Efraín is in this team. But you also see Galdames, who's in Chile, dual national, Chilean Mexican, that is also, you know, part of this team. Tun Wilke, who's also Dutch Mexican. So I think all those names are standouts. But I think if I have to like put the spotlight on someone, it has to be Efraín Álvarez, because of his, we know his talent. We know that, you know, well liked by Zlatan when he was in Los Angeles. So I think all of that really puts him on the spotlight. And I'm pretty sure clubs in Europe that have been following his career in MLS will be pressing over there in France just to see him live.
So you mentioned at least two of the four overseas-based players in your squad. The four in total is Álvarez, as you said, at LA Galaxy, Pizzuto at Braga, but then Santiago Muñoz, the real-life version, is at Newcastle in England, just like the film, and also Wilker at Spal in Italy. My next question for you was going to be, who are your key players or players to look out for in this tournament? But I think you've already touched upon that. So what instead I'm going to ask is, of your local players, of your players still playing their football in Mexico, who do you back to perhaps earn a move off the back of this tournament into MLS or into Europe?
You know, I would have to say Rubalcaba from Pumas. You know, I think, you know, this is a kid from, I think he was born in California, if I'm not mistaken, my details. Was spotted in a tournament by the Pumas scouts. And then they were like, let's invite this kid to Mexico and see what he has. So he played in the U20s, but built his way up into the first team. I think in his first game, his first touch, he scored a goal for Pumas in Liga MX. But he's a forward that is very modern. You know, he's a guy that can move to the wings perfectly, you know, but also be central. You know, very, very high IQ, I'd say. I think with Pumas now that, you know, runners up in Conca Champions, they had the top goal scorer in Dineno, the Argentine. And I think if Dineno is sold to another club, whether that be another Liga MX team or even Europe or even MLS, I think Rubalcaba will finally get his opportunity to be the starter in Pumas. And I think this tournament could be the one that breaks the ice in some way or another, that, you know, this is a real deal type of forward. So I do see a lot of potential in him. I mean, I think overall, when I look at the U21 list from Mexico, he's probably on top of the list as one of the most exciting ones that we have. But I want to say that if he gets the minutes in this tournament, he's gonna do stuff that will stand out and could certainly help him in moving abroad.
I'm going to go slightly off track with my next question because I found that answer interesting and it raised a thought in my head. Do Mexican football fans and perhaps Mexican players themselves, do they see a move from Liga MX to MLS as a step up or is it not like that? How is it viewed?
That's a good question, Jordan. I mean, it touches home to a lot of things because I've been involved in both leagues. I think the thinking, the way of thought is changing. You know, I think that the players now see it as a, I wouldn't say a step up, but it's an opportunity to grow, you know, to get yourself out of your comfort zone. Because when you become a superstar or a big player in Mexico, you're untouchable in a certain way. You sort of are in a hierarchy that is, you're a star, you're a main player in your Liga MX club. But when you move to MLS, you have to take other responsibilities, you know, learn another language, learn some other tactics that are not so common in Mexico. You know, in MLS, I think there's more physicality, more long ball, more of those two, which I think we don't see that much in Mexico. You know, you're playing with players that have been in Bundesliga, in Premier League, you know. Just take the case of Jairo Torres with Chicago right now. Chicago paid good money for Torres. And now Torres is in a scenario where, one, he's a DP. Second, he's playing with, you know, Shaqiri, who has a great history. and also other players that have been in other European leagues. So that in itself, I think it puts them in a situation where you learn new things. We'll see the evolution of this, but I do sense that there'll be more of those cases in the upcoming years, no? There's still a lot of skepticism, of course, but I think the route, if Jairo Torres works, then I think we'll see more of those cases. Right now, for example, in Atlanta, Josef Martinez got hurt. So who do they bring in? Ronaldo Cisneros. Ronaldo Cisneros was dubbed one of the best striker prospects in Mexico at one point. Santos sold him to Chivas. And then Chivas, he couldn't break out. But now we see that in MLS, in several games, he already scored several goals. So it's going to be an interesting case to see how those two do, you know, and how how MLS can propel their careers to a certain extent.
Okay, no, it was interesting. It was something that you'd have an answer for, and something that's been on my mind for quite a few months, really. Not just Mexico, but just, you know, what countries in Latin America see MLS as a step up or see it as a backward step. And the reason why it's been on my mind in the past 3 weeks is because obviously we've seen Jefferson Savarino, probably the best Venezuela player at the moment for the national team in the past 12, 18 months, has gone back to Salt Lake, having had, you know, a few really impressive seasons in Brazil. And, you know, some Venezuelan fans see that as, you know, a step back because he went from MLS to, you know, the Brazilian, who would then become Brazilian champions, really deep runs in Libertadores, and was hoping the step would be Europe.
Yeah, exactly, Jordan. And this is another thing that from our perspective, you know, I think it's very important for the player to be to play, to have minutes, no? You know, for example, right now you said Diego Lainez in 2018, best player of the Toulon tournament, but he hasn't really played since then, you know? So it's like, you have to be very careful of where you go in Europe and where you're going to be able to play, you know, having minutes. And sometimes it does become obvious that the option in MLS is pretty open in the sense that you'll be playing, you'll get minutes. I mean, the case of Brendan Aaronson is the best case or one of the best examples to put out there. You know, with Philadelphia Union, the kid went up and he played every game. Went to Salzburg, comfortable. And now he's in Leeds. You know, it's such a step-by-step process. But it all, the main thing that helped him was playing time. He played. If you start missing in that step, let's say he arrives to Salzburg and doesn't play that much, then the process is over. So so you got to be very careful of where you pick your destinations. And I think in Latin America, we still don't really comprehend that part. You know, we are moved by the club that picks them, no?
Yeah, you're very much right on that last point. And it can, you know, sometimes a player will step out of Venezuela into Europe and fans just look at that first move. They're not thinking of the second or third move ahead. They just want, you know, that first step to be to the grandest club possible, even if it means that player doesn't play for 3 years, which could be, you know, really damaging. But to circle back to Toulon tournament, how far do you think Mexico can go in this tournament?
You know, I think the squad is made for a deep run. Jordan, I do think that, you know, they can match some of their best performances over the years. But I think this tournament is very, very critical in just finding the style, no? And sort of seeing where the players stand, you know? Where is a Santi Muñoz? Where is a Wilke? Where is a Guzman? You know, where is Rubalcaba? You know, kind of like a great place to see where do these players stand, what they can offer in the future to the senior team, and just build from that. You know, I think the national team in this age group is coming from a good performance in the Olympics. So I think, of course, this group of players is technically the one that, I'm not going to say all of them, but most of them will be in that Olympic tournament and will try to, win a medal. So I think that's how they're seeing it now. Also, you know, it's a very strange year because it's a World Cup year. You know, right now the manager is Martino, but I'm not 100% sure if Martino will be the manager after the World Cup. You know, and I think that's where it's sort of like the presidents and the sporting directors of the national team are seeing this situation as like, okay, let's get as many players as we can right now to build a strong pool. So when the new manager comes, there's a big, a very, very substantial pool of players to pick from, no? And I think that's where this U21 team comes in. And also the U20 team that will play in the CONCACAF Championship. So it's an age group that's already very well built. And I think these tournaments will just help it grow a little bit more with, you know, familiar faces and familiarity. But I think the main goal right now for the Mexican national team is to have a big pool, the biggest pool possible, just for if there's a new manager after Martino, there's a bigger pool to pick from.
And this is, you know, in your answer, you touched upon them getting a lot of regularity together, a lot of game time, the CONCACAF Championship coming up later in the year, eyes towards the future of the senior national team. And that's why I think Venezuela's participation in this tournament is so important, because in recent years, obviously because of COVID, a lot of youth football just did not happen in South America, and a very talented Venezuelan generation was victim of that. And, you know, this opportunity to play in Europe is just unprecedented in recent times for young Venezuelan players. Finally, my last question, I wanted to ask, will Mexican football fans be following this tournament live? Like, is this going to be a tournament that people are going to watch back in Mexico or pay no attention to? And I'm going to front load that question with the fact that when I was living in England, so the first 27 years of my life, and I would call myself a big football fan, and England participated in the Toulon tournament multiple times, I never watched it. Half the time, I didn't even know it was on.
Yeah. Look, you know, I think now with Twitter, for example, and Instagram and all these, you know, we live in that generation, no? So a lot of people are curious to see Santi Muñoz, you know, we know that he plays for Newcastle, but we really don't see those games sometimes because they're youth games. So like, just to see him with the national team is a big deal, no? I'm not going to say that it's World Cup. Also, the times don't help because people are in lunch and stuff and it's a work day. But you know, there's a lot of people that will be intrigued. I'm you know, I was just in Mexico yesterday. And so this whole week I was in Mexico. And you know, there's the love for the game is insane. You know, it's so passionate that even if it's just the U21, people will tune in, you know, because they're curious to see how the team plays. And like you said, I mean, there has been success before. And because there has been success before, they expect success now with this tournament, not especially with the names that are on the list. You know, and I think that's going to be, I'm not going to say that people will be tuned in like crazy, but people will be looking for the score after work, or if they have time to see the repetition afterwards, you know, they'll see it, you know, because it's a team that has several players that are, you know, we want to see Pisuto. Like, what does Pisuto offer? I mean, he hasn't been playing in Europe, but we know that he's a talented player. Galdames, who's coming from Chile, like, what does he offer? I think the Mexican senior team played a friendly in Austin back in December. And Galdames came with the team with Marcelo Flores, but Galdames didn't play, but he was part of the team. So we know that he is highly rated by the coaching staff, the senior national team coaching staff. So of course we want to see him on the field and see what he can offer. No, so I think in a lot, I think Jordan has to do with social media. I mean, without social media, I don't think this tournament would be so well known as it is.
Yeah, it's definitely also, I think, aided by the fact that we've not had it for 2 years and now it's back. And like, sometimes you only miss something when it's like, you know, not around. It's, you know, taken for granted. But I definitely think the importance of it to countries outside of Europe, you know, not just Latin American countries, but the African countries that are participating as well is huge. And when I was researching for these three podcasts in general, when I was looking at Indonesia, you know, the fact that the breakout player at the 2017 tournament was an Indonesian, even though they lost all three games, probably propelled his career in a way that wouldn't have happened otherwise. He went off the back of that tournament to Poland, to Lechia Gdansk, and now he's at Seneca. So, you know, he's had a career in Europe. And he's still, you know, only 21 years old, because the Toulon tournament is such a young tournament. to go back and look at the players that played in it before they were big names is, you know, it's a treasure trove. Somebody will probably write a book about the Toulon tournament one day, and it will be full of big names.
Yeah, no, like you said, you know, Héctor Herrera was a player of the tournament, and Diego Lainez, and, you know, Herrera already had a successful career in Europe. Will play now in MLS. But, you know, hopefully Lainez can sort of follow his footsteps and do something similar. And they, you know, their first exposure, let's say, some of their first exposure in Europe came in the Toulon tournament.
Naib, thank you very much for joining us today. It was great to know that I had somebody I could call upon to speak to about Mexican football. So I really appreciate you taking the time.
No, thank you, Jordan. And always, you know, when it comes to Mexican football or even, you know, MLS and stuff, I'll be there.
Thank you very much.